Welcome to the first and likely only episode of the series of Cara Mercier podcasts. This episode serves as my final for food systems and sustainable agriculture. My cross-cutting issue was climate change, and the sustainable agriculture solution I focused on was agroforestry. I called my older brother, who's currently living in Australia, to bounce some ideas off of him to write this as a paper. Through the course of talking to him, I realized I had just said everything I wanted to put in my paper. So I called him back and asked if he would want to redo that conversation in the form of a podcast. He said, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, but I'm going to poke holes in your argument and I'm going to challenge you and I want you to come back with answers. So that's what he and I did. I hope you enjoy this recording and I hope you learned something. Kyle, why don't you tell us a little bit about your life right now? How old are you? Where are you living? What are you up to?
Yeah, thank you, Kara. Good to be here. So I am down in Australia at the moment. I am working on my master's degree in information technology. I did my undergraduate in data analytics at the University of New Hampshire, and I graduated in 2019. That was kind of the first time I was introduced to, I guess, more advanced concepts of sustainable practices and, you know, the problems that we're creating to our environment.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a good summary. So, Kyle, what is the problem? So you know that I called you to talk about, mostly agroforestry, which is an alternative type of agriculture. First, why do we need a different one? What's wrong with the current systems? So when I ask you that, what comes to mind first for you?
So you had said agroforestry. That was something I had never heard of before. It's definitely an interesting concept. I actually hadn't heard of mono versus polyculture before. Those specific terms, I guess, I knew about it conceptually. But I know when you had mentioned it to me originally, I just kind of thought, how is that feasible, I suppose? I mean, I know with the amount of food that we're pumping out to massive population centers and cities and around the globe, I can't see how that would be very easily replaced.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And that is kind of, you know, one of the limitations of this, which we will get to. So basically, just to give a broad frame, the main kind of things, you know, are climate change in regards to agriculture. So we have, you know, dead zones in the ocean from just tons of fertilizer being pumped in through the waterways. We have emissions just going like crazy from industrial ag.
So is that fertilizer that trickles through the soil into the ocean?
Yeah, so it's basically runoff, and the Mississippi River is actually a huge watershed, obviously, and all of it leads to the Gulf of Mexico, and there's a huge dead zone just from all the fertilizer.
What do you mean by a dead zone? Like,
there's very little to no life. So, you know, any sort of reef or like fish, it's just not livable area in the ocean. Very highly polluted.
It's not fertilizing the ocean, is it?
It is definitely not fertilizing the ocean.
Fertilizer wouldn't be needed in agroforestry?
Right, no. Not necessarily. So there is that option to be organic, and we'll get there. So first, you know, we'll just finish kind of framing the question. So we have just the general issues, and, you know, dead zones, that was one of the general ones, so thank you for that question. There's, you know, there's tons of emissions being poured out from industrial agriculture. And actually, within agriculture, livestock production is actually responsible for 80% of the emissions. So that's a huge portion of the emissions from agriculture. So we definitely, you know, can look at that and how to lower it, especially if we're going to meet these goals that we see in the news about, you know, net zero with carbon in the next few years. This is definitely an area we need to look at.
What percent of total emissions is that?
It's 18% of all human emissions, but 18% is a pretty good chunk. Yeah, when you're looking at all of human emissions, pretty good chunk. So anyway, you know, just some more climate change issues to sort of rattle off here. You have confined animal feeding operations, which I'm not sure if you've seen those anywhere, but they're just pretty unhealthy for the animals. They don't produce, you know, very healthy products, but that's just largely what we have to do right now in our current system to get the amount of production we need. Seems, you know, pretty clear that our current models are not sustainable in the long term, and they're pretty vulnerable. So through this pandemic, we've seen like basically just a backup in the food production system. And the one that, you know, our system's pretty linear, so it makes sense that it just sort of slammed to a halt. And there was posts of farmers just completely dumping out milk onto the ground because restaurants and schools are closed, so they don't have anyone to sell this to. And they can donate it, but then they're just eating the cost. So the pandemic has definitely shown, like, food system's pretty vulnerable, you know, we need change.
Especially the supply chains, how they're organized right now.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you talk about, I don't know the exact figure, but it's something like major cities, like New York City, for example, have something like less than a day's worth of food within the city. So if something happened to the supply chain, then it's anarchy, really.
Yeah, that's actually crazy. I didn't know that stat, but that perfectly outlines what I'm saying. Yeah, imagine just all those people there one day and they have no food. So that's kind of where agroforestry would be a good solution. You know, there's not a ton of open land in New York City, which is, again, one of the limitations is just land access. But what it seems to me, you know, large scale, looking to the future of how agriculture truly will be sustainable and not producing emissions crazy like it is, to me seems like small scale sustainable practices in a lot of places. So just a lot of small operations. Mm-hmm. And agroforestry is a perfect example of one of those. So basically what it is, it's layering the land in forest systems. So it basically just kind of mimics what the woods look like. It integrates crops and livestock. So you have both of those components. You can have a wide range of products being made there. It provides a very diversified income because of all those products. You are making like a little of a lot, so you can get a lot of different income. And it does have, you know, unfortunately less production than industrial ag right at the beginning, but the quality is so much higher. And as time goes, the production increases. Like, as the soil improves, it's going to produce more. So it's worth it to kind of invest in this.
So obviously, so you'd be losing the crop yield, I guess, roughly, because the animals in that ecosystem would be consuming those crops as well?
Not necessarily. So some of them do. There are form of agroforestry where the trees are meant to produce food for the animals, so that makes it, you know, more of a closed system, but that's not necessarily the case.
So in that case, the livestock would be the primary output?
Not necessarily. So it is very, again, like I said, very diversified, so you are getting a lot of crops. You could have an entire field, or, you know, a whole acre of a very wide array of crops. You can have shrubs, you can have any sort of like alley row crop, and then you can have trees as well, and you have chickens, cows grazing through it. You know, people do it a lot of different ways, which is why it's so great, because it's very adaptable. You can use it, you know, in a lot of different climates, and we've seen it working very well in kind of colder climates, just because that's typically, you know, the forest setting can get colder, and then it gets more tropical as you go.
Is it fair to say this is similar to free range livestock?
Not a little bit. So, you know, free range, obviously self-explanatory, they free range, but in agroforestry, it's very strategic of where the animals are. So Joel Salatin is an organic farmer in Virginia, and he uses something called mob stacking to control his where his animals are. So basically it's just high-tech electric fencing to migrate his animals. So he wants them, you know, in this row this day, or over here this day, and this just shifts them around where they need, you know, fertilizer enhancement and where it needs to be grazed.
Yeah.
And Joel is very big on using herbivores to prune this grass instead of, you know, like weeding and all these things. You can just let the herbivores do what they're meant to do. It's a very natural process. So is that kind of making sense? Do you have any more questions really about agroforestry?
Yeah, I can see how that plays more into the idea of an ecosystem than directly free range.
Right, yeah. So, just to illustrate it again, there's this man named Mark Shepard, and he's a farmer as well. And he uses this in sort of a form of what he calls biomimicry. And he says, how we do it is how nature does it. So just his system, like, exactly how it would be done. You know, there is some manipulation on his point of just enhancing it, but it's very natural systems. So he just, like, observes nature in order to imitate it. And genetic work on his farm pretty much just means keeping the plants that thrive on neglect. So it's very natural selection sort of deal. And it's working very well for him. He has really good results. So yeah, Mark and Joel are two people we've kind of crossed over this semester, and they definitely are having great results with this. And even just yesterday, or the day before, I was trying to, you know, gather some more information about this, and I came across an entire podcast just called the Agroforestry Podcast. And it was quite extensive. It was really cool to just hear from people, you know, all over the country discussing and developing this. And it was based out of a college. I want to say University of Virginia. I could be wrong, but they had a whole center for agroforestry.
So it's already being used pretty widely, at least experimentally.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely, you know, it's happening. Yeah. So, you know, it definitely needs some more research. We need to apply it more places and tweak it a bit to make it a better system. Building off that, there are pros and cons to this, just like all other systems or things you're going to come up with.
Yeah, that was a trade-off.
Yeah, so basically, this is a good balance between conservation and production, because you can still produce a good amount. You know, you're still avoiding those really harmful environmental practices with the fertilizer, because the soil for this is just so nutrient rich that you don't need really those substitutes. And same with like the animal production, you're not getting all the emissions that you'd get from the confined animal feeding operations. It's totally different. The animals in general are just healthier as well, because their diet is so natural. It doesn't have all these like grain substitutions and the externalities involved in producing that grain as well. So the opportunity for this is really diverse, you know, across landscapes. It can complement large-scale production, or it can be its own thing in a smaller setting. You know, we can produce it in places and spaces that we've not been using, because it's the forest. There's not, you know, there's not a lot going on there. I would say, you know, overall, the biggest downfall of this is just the scale and the time to get the return. So
it's going to take some pretty heavy investment in the short term before we start yielding these results.
Yeah. That's what it's seeming like. It is, you know, a good option, but it has some things that need to be worked on.
Yeah. So this would really require a commitment from major food industries to shift away from the business model that is, we're going to make as much money as possible, essentially. We're going to make as much food and as much money as possible. Like, they would need to be willing to put that aside. Is that correct?
And I would, you know, in some sense, yes. I would say it doesn't just fall on major food production chains. I don't remember exactly what area you said.
Just big food industries.
Yes.
Like, let's say, you know, people factory farming, stuff like that.
Yeah, so definitely, you know, they're part of it, but it's not just them. It also falls on policy as far as, you know, like regulations in the government and the consumer of what we want to buy. And truly, as much resources as we have, we know they're running out. We can't just keep pumping these emissions. We can't just continue to pour fertilizer into the ocean. Things need to change. It's not so much that we just want them to. They have to. So the thing really that needs to happen, I would say, for agroforestry is capitalizing, and, you know, maybe you can chime in on this with your marketing background, so sort of capitalizing on the growing consciousness of sustainability. You know, our generation especially is big on this word and big on just the concept in general. So how would you think as far as marketing for this?
One thing that always resonated with me is I always found that when you shift a conversation to make it mainly about climate, there's always going to be room for people to just kind of blatantly deny that we are causing the Earth to heat up. And obviously the science is pretty concise on that. I mean, we're having a pretty direct influence. But one thing you can't deny is that under our population is growing quickly, exponentially, and it's not going to stop. So if you can show people that, let's say we aren't heating up the Earth, let's say it's fine and we're going to continue at this in this climate forever, we still are not going to have the means necessary right now to feed the growing amount of people that are coming. And there's just no denying that. Those are the facts.
Yeah.
Already, as it is, if people ate as much meat as we did in Western societies, but you just couldn't. Every you know, spare acre of land would need to be used for producing livestock. There's no denying any of that. So I think, I don't know. Does that resonate with you in the same way?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. So basically, like, kind of what you said, you know, we do need to change. There is no denying that. People can deny climate change all they want, but you can't deny resource degradation. Like, it's there or it's not. Yeah, we're going to run out.
I think it's like we're consuming 1.2, or no, it's more than that. It's like 1.7 Earth's worth of resources annually. Yeah. So we're just constantly building a deficit.
Exactly.
And eventually that bill's going to come due.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can only, you know, dig so deep until it's just everything's gone. So that's the thing about this, is that it's a very, like, closed system. It just, we don't need to be pumping all this input into it, which is going to degrade from our natural systems and cost a lot. So it goes down that way. And another thing, this is just sort of, you know, a broader idea, but as I mentioned, that I think the way for this really to work is a lot of small operations. And I think that sort of creates a window for really good job opportunities. In a lot of these places, people are very removed from the food system, just in general in society. Like, they don't, you know, people don't really understand how food is produced, just because why would you? You know, you go your whole life, you might not come across it.
Especially if you're less fortunate and you haven't been able to, you know, really get out there and get educated.
Absolutely, yeah. Totally.
Going on. I mean, that's not something that you have the ability to worry about, really.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know if you've heard the term food desert, but I've come across this in a few of my sustainability classes. And basically, it just is an area that is typically lower income, and people don't have easy access to healthy food. They're pretty much, their options are just processed, you know, fully packaged, not fresh at all, from, you know, maybe a random grocery store or like a gas station. And is, you know, whether it be transportation or expenses, they just don't have access to nutritious food.
So could you give me an example of somebody who, so when you say that, I'm thinking lower income family in a dense, you know, just lower income area of a city.
Yes.
Or maybe just a very, very rural part of the country where, you know, just options are limited.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it. I mean, you pretty much just did give the two examples. Technically, I believe Winooski, which is where St. Michael's is a food desert, technically. We talked about that in one of our classes, and it does, you know, it is different than some of the other ones we've seen, but it does qualify. There are enough low-income people there who don't have access to quality food. And we've seen, like, on the St. Mike's farm, how a lot of these practices can very well be implemented into Vermont climate. So this is just seems like such a viable option for like this small area of Vermont.
So Vermont could use agroforestry.
Absolutely, it already is in some places.
So not to put you on the spot, but how does that, do you know roughly how that would change between the seasons? Like, would crop yield lower in the winter or vice versa?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I'm not quite versed on the specific crop seasons. You know, I know there's obviously growing seasons, harvesting seasons, but a lot of our semester was cut short, unfortunately, by this virus, so we didn't get a ton of hands-on experience and, like, really seeing how the soil works, which is unfortunate.
Hey, how's that for a reason to shift away from factory farming?
Yeah, for real.
Cause a global pandemic.
Yeah, that's a good point. Oh my goodness, yeah, there was so much not to jump topics, just a quick side note, there was so much virus transmission in industrial agriculture just with like a lot of the workers that don't have clean working conditions. They had no options. Yeah, crazy. And then the government would still force them to be open because we need that food. And then what happens? Yep. Tons of cases pop up. That's another sort of part of the inequality piece we talked about, is just the workers do not receive, you know, good opportunities or fair rights always.
Yeah. I'm sure that's even more true in poor countries that just kind of resort to this as a, you know, a last means.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So anyway, you know, kind of dragging back to the original point we started with, which is how to expand agroforestry, you know, how would it be implemented on a larger scale? Or so, you know, again, I would kind of say that the policy shift and funding shift is important here. And I think we're going to see that becoming more present as time goes on and we lose more resources and, you know, climate change just becomes more evident and resource management becomes more important as our population increases, which is going to happen, as you said, you know, it's exponential, can't avoid it. What's really crazy to me, and I learned that in this class actually, is that we have enough calories being produced on the earth right now to feed everybody. We can feed everyone. We don't because the, you know, distribution is very off, but they do exist. We can produce that much. It's just not quality.
We're also for livestock. If you take a lot of calories worth, give it to that livestock, and then you yield a small amount.
Absolutely.
Of calories.
Yep. And I'm sure you've, you know, come across all the externalities involved in livestock production, just the emissions, the water use, the soil degradation. It's just, the list goes on. You know, it's clear we gotta change some of these ways. It's just crazy to me that we have the calories, we have everything we need, and people are still starving because we can't distribute it. So basically, you wouldn't have to distribute it if it existed in your community. I mean, there would still be community distribution, but you wouldn't need the emissions from trucks and planes, you know, carrying it all across the world, all across the country.
Yep.
One part of that that's kind of tough to look at down the line is that we might have to be eating seasonal.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is what your original question was. Eating seasonal, you know, eating local, which I don't think it would be that, I mean, it would be difficult just because we know the wide variety of food that exists, but if that's what it takes, I mean, might be what we have to do.
So let me ask you this. So agroforestry is it possible in areas that don't have natural, like, strong biodiverse ecosystems? So let's say, for example, in, you know, the deserts of Africa, right? Like, is there a form of agroforestry that could work in an environment like that?
The deserts? I'm not sure. I don't, again, you know, I'm not totally versed on soil health.
That's a question.
No, that was a good question. So I'm not sure if you could perfectly implement agroforestry into that setting that you're talking about, but I do have faith, I do believe that there is an alternative agriculture for whatever is being done there. I'm sure that one exists or one is, you know, being developed that, would be feasible to use there. So that's kind of, you know, broader scale. Agroforestry does have its cons. It doesn't have to be the only one we use. So it can be just like as a supplement. It can be just sort of an addition to offset some of the costs of bigger production and, you know, use less resources. And then it can expand, or it can be other little forms of sustainable agriculture. It doesn't have to be this branch. It could be different ones that work for specific climates, just as long as it's not huge industrial ag being shipped everywhere. It could just be any form that works in that climate for that population.
So if I had to put you on the spot and ask you right now, is agroforestry the end-all solution to solving our food crisis going forward?
I'm going to say no. I don't really think there is an end-all solution, you know, It's such a complex issue. There's so many other sub problems. I don't think there's just one end all fix the problem, you know. I think looking at agriculture in general is super important for just the health of our planet and the health of people. So this is just, you know, it's important to have a good option. And this does produce very quality food, very, you know, healthy, what I was saying, where people don't have access to nutritious food. So if they had a small scale ag in their community, they would have so, like, much easier access, you know, maybe cost could be lower. And, you know, it is tough to get that stuff going. So if on a big scale, long term, if there was some sort of overarching company that would almost send like a little, parachute, drop everything you need, not literally drop from a plane, but you know, they bring everything. They bring whatever tools and resources you would need to get this started in a community. You can hire community members. And you know, obviously there's a lot of planning and funding that would need to go into this. But I do think that would be an option.
I'd like to see some, like, some local community investment from this. Like, on a governmental level, it'd be interesting if they put the same, like, time and resources into this as they did with, like, the upkeep of parks and other things like that. Like, just treat it as another, like, social service of the town.
Well, unfortunately, what you just said, you know, upkeep of parks, that doesn't get a ton of funding. They're really, you know, especially the past few years, they've definitely had their funding cut. So I would say if they're going to, you know, reallocate funds at all, what you have to look at is the industrial agriculture system can't just be shut down. That's what we rely on. We have so many things coming out of it, not even food, but just textiles, everything. The industrial agriculture system, you can't just shut it down. But there are a lot of government subsidies that go into that, you know, to support a lot of the corn and soy farming that happens out west. So if we were able to just sort of transition that, like shrink that down as you increase the other ones and have the funds show that, I think
so
that's
if
sort
it
of
takes some time before you start realizing these benefits, like the time is now to start, really, like the longer we wait, the harder we
need. Right, yeah, no, investment time is now, I would say. Yeah. Do you have any other, like, kind of lingering questions about this? Anything that popped into your brain?
No, this was a concept that was completely new to me until you had asked me to come onto your podcast and speak about it with you. So, I mean, I'm happy for that opportunity. Always good to learn about anything, really.
Definitely, yeah. No, I'm glad we had this conversation. I'm glad I could teach you a little bit about this, you know, branch of agriculture. Thanks for coming on to my podcast. This was great. So, you know, just to close up, Kyle, what time is it for you right now?
Right now it is 11:02 p.m.
And for me it is 7:02 a.m. So Kyle and I had to coordinate our timing to record this a little bit. You know, kind of just shows the times we're living in. You can do all this from across the world.
Hey, it's a small world, bro.
Thanks for listening to the very first episode of Kara Mercier Podcasts. I did just want to mention that my brother's quote at the end there got cut off, and what he had said was, "It's a small world, but we're all in this together." And he's right. And if there's one thing I've learned from this project, it's that there is no one solution. But all of these smaller solutions, whether they work in one place or not, are building up to solve the greater problems. That's sort of the complex solution to a complex problem. I did just want to disclaim, too, that there was some loud noises going on throughout the recording. And while I have an older brother who's far away, I have younger siblings who are very nearby, and they're quite loud. Thanks for hanging in there, and I hope you enjoyed.